The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada, and goodbye, John Gruden as head coach of the Raiders. That broke overnight. John Gruden used misogynistic, homophobic language in emails, and he's gone. Look, you might have gotten away with that 35, 40 years ago, but I think it's been, I've been on the air for 21 years, and I don't think I've heard a homophobic slur on the air that we had to blink out. I don't think I've heard a misogynistic slur on the air. We do screen calls, of course, for drunks and knuckleheads, but people say blurt stuff out and you have to dump it. I haven't heard that in 20-something years. I haven't gotten emails in 20 years. What is Gruden a caveman? I have to go read the emails and go and seek forgiveness, John. Do something. You're not going to be back on TV. That's quite the stunner. I woke up this morning to the greatest story. Now, I did my show prep last night about 7 o'clock and then watched 12 Angry Men, which I'm here to tell you I had never watched before. And I finally got around to that. Fetching Mrs. Hewitt went west yesterday. I'm going to Atlanta tomorrow, then going west. And Ed Morrissey is in for me on Thursday and Friday. And so the day is, you know, the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt has me doing something, right? So I've got to do whatever. So all of a sudden, I've got nothing to do. So I watched 12 Angry Men. And it's a magnificent movie. And I'd done my show prepping, so I went to sleep. I'm reading this book by Brett Baer, Grant, to Rescue the Republic. This is a very fine book. And I'm interviewing Brett Baer next week at the Nixon Library on Wednesday or Thursday, I think. But in any event, I didn't see this story until this morning, and I found it doing my before show prep, which involves talking to Dwayne. And at that point, I just couldn't believe it. First of all, you got to remember the cringe-inducing video that Vice President Kamala Harris released last week with the kids visiting her at the Vice President's mansion. So let's play a couple of those clips. Cut number 7, Kamala Harris at the, what is the Naval Observatory in the old days? It's now the Vice President's residence, talking with 6 kids on the porch, cut number 7.
Very nice to meet you, Zoriel.
Nice to meet you, Emily.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So this is the residence of the Vice President, so let's all stand up. Here we are.
Oh,
hanging out together.
Okay, so it's kind of cringe-inducing. And you think it's sort of like a knockoff of the Veep series starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus. It got worse, by the way. Second clip, clip number 8.
One of the things I'm most excited about, but the other, you guys are going to see. You're going to literally see the craters on the moon with your own eyes.
Oh, my goodness.
With your own eyes, I'm telling you, it is going to be unbelievable. So that's one of the things we can do here, too, which makes it.
So that's, okay, the Veep doing Veep things from the Washington Examiner. The first installment of Vice President Kamala Harris's YouTube original space series featured child actors who auditioned for their roles in the project. Trevor Bernardino, a 13-year-old actor from Carmel, California, and one of the 5 teenagers featured in the video, was asked to submit a monologue discussing something he was passionate about and 3 questions for a world leader. According to an interview with KSBW-TV, Trevor then interviewed with the production director. And then after that, like a week later, my agent called me and said, "Hey, Trevor, you booked it." Trevor said he didn't learn until much later he'd be meeting with Kamala Harris, who was appointed to lead the National Space Council earlier this year. Bernardino was joined by Derek Brooks of Illinois, another child actor. Emily Kim, likewise a child actor. Zoriel Tapo, a child actor. And an aspiring journalist who interviewed former First Lady Michelle Obama and Sidney Schmuck. All 5 of them are actors, Bernardino's father told the Washington Examiner in an interview on Monday. They couldn't trust Kamala Harris to work without professionals.
That's the greatest story in the world.
That is the greatest way to start a Tuesday morning. Tuesday's the worst day of the broadcast week, right? It's the hardest day of the broadcast week because everyone travels back to D.C. on Monday's the easiest day. You got all the Sunday shows. Stuff happened on Friday. It's got 3 days of news in one day. On Monday, people are traveling back to the Capitol, so not much happens. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday are the easiest, are easy days, and Monday's the easiest day. Tuesday's the hardest day of the talk business and the news business, unless something terrible happens, which I don't hope for. Nevertheless, that's a gift from the gods. How bad of a vice president is Kamala Harris? Now, vice presidency involves nothing. John Adams was the first malcontent, and they've all been malcontents since, because it's the worst job in America. It's like being lieutenant governor of California, which is the only job I ever ran for, and I was obliged to withdraw. I was running for it as a joke, and the Salem Radio Network said I couldn't run for it as a joke because then I'd have to give equal time to the other lieutenant governor losers who wanted to be lieutenant governor. And I was promising the campaign on never going to the office and not taking any money. That was my campaign because they're absolutely the appendices of the body politic. But now vice president has reached a new low, child actors at the National Naval
Observatory. This was meant to make her look relatable.
Yep,
and
relatable.
They can't even pay kids to make her look
relatable. They can't pay kids to like her. All right, let me do the rundown, the real rundown. U.S. COVID cases dropped 22%, according to the Financial Times, raising hopes that the worst may be over. If you haven't seen that football stadium, most of America has moved on already. AstraZeneca says a new COVID drug cuts the risk of severe disease by 50%. So another therapeutic is along the way. Boosters are complicating efforts to persuade the unvaccinated to get shots. Now, this is a New York Times story that I do not understand. The unvaccinated at this point have heard more than seven messages about the vaccines being available at a drugstore near you. They've heard me and everybody else in the world that they listen to, and I'm probably the most reliable pro-vaxxer on the right. Tell them again and again and again, you really don't want to mess around with this disease. It will kill you. It will give you a terrible illness. It will lay you out. Or maybe you'll get a cold, but you don't want to run the risk. Go get the vaccine. It's free. It's local at the local drugstore. And if they haven't gotten it yet, it's not because they haven't heard the message. They're going to need a persuader that's in their life to persuade them. Not cajole them, not yell at them, but persuade them. The booster doesn't complicate it at all. The only thing that's complicated is the message of the FDA, which simply should be, go get a booster, which is about what they're going to eventually change to because they figured out they screwed it up. But don't let me tell you anything about communications, FDA, because you're smarter than everybody in the world and you know everything. Yeah. Dr. Fauci says he doesn't expect a vaccine mandate for domestic air immediately. We are now done officially with Dr. Fauci. I like the guy, but he tried to make news 3 weekends in a row, and you begin to get the feeling that cue the music from Sunset Boulevard. Have you got that music by chance, Barbara Streisand? Waiting for my close-up? That's our new Tony Fauci music, because really, it's gotten to that point. Elon Musk has mocked Jeff Bezos as Musk extends his lead over Jeff Bezos as being the world's richest man. I think I have to give a message to Elon Musk. I don't know either of you two. Jeff Bezos is a lot more impressive than Elon Musk. Jeff Bezos is the fellow whose letters I read. I'm an investor in Amazon, but I read them anyway because he's thoughtful and he's strategic. He's not wild. He doesn't get sued for defaming people involved in a life or death rescue mission in Thailand. I kind of like Jeff Bezos, and I don't really think the money matters much after $200 million. Anybody in the $200 million club and above has made so much money that money doesn't mean anything to them. After that, it's just digits, and it doesn't really matter. A lot of people managed to destroy a lot. Bezos, to my knowledge, has simply rebuilt the infrastructure of America for delivering things that the military will find useful if we're ever in a conflict again. My bet's on Bezos. U.S. oil benchmark hits another 7-year high. Great. Oil prices jump above $80 and natural gas races higher, turbocharged by supply shortages, according to the Wall Street Journal. Looking great for the winter, Joe Biden. Warehouse jobs, recently thought of as jobs of the future, according to the Washington Post, are suddenly jobs few workers want. Another great development. U.S. Christmas retail crush comes early as supply chains buckle, according to the Financial Times. Then we have two stories on kid toy, not one, but two. From the Telegraph in Great Britain, Lego to remove gender bias from its toys. The Danes, I guess. I'm sorry. Then from the Washington Post, new California law will force retailers to have gender-neutral toy sections. And you wonder why California is falling apart. And then New York, giving every kindergartner $100 for college. That's really going to change behavior. Then I love the Politico headline, the Democrats' privileged college kid problem. Their volunteers are turning people off. California's Huntington Beach reopens. Good, the oil spill is under control. And then finally, Politico, my favorite line. The president's decline is alarming. Biden trapped in coronavirus malaise. The president's decline is alarming. It was supposed to be about poll numbers. That had me look twice. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin Resveratrol Omega, temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains, temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains, and you can't do better than that three-week starter pack, $19.95. Welcome back, America. That music means it's time for David Drucker of the Washington Examiner of Fox News fame and the author of a brand new great book, In Trump's Shadow. Now, what you may not know in the book world is that authors have to commit to certain television stations and certain radio stations not to talk to anyone about their book, which is named In Trump's Shadow, until In Trump's Shadow has actually been dropped and they've done their interview in the order that they're supposed to occur. So David Drucker can't actually talk to me about In Trump's Shadow, but it doesn't mean I can't tell you to go to Amazon.com and order In Trump's Shadow, because next week when I talk to David Drucker, it will be my turn. Actually, 2 weeks it'll be my turn to talk to him about In Trump's Shadow, because In Trump's Shadow drops on Monday, and David will owe somebody an interview before me. But I think, nevertheless, I can let you know that you really ought to go get it today and have it delivered on Monday. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. I'm great. And thank you for the seven mentions. I believe we're almost there of In Trump's Shadow.
There you go. I left you the killer, the number seven. I need to know something, though. I read in the Washington Examiner, your newspaper this morning, that Kamala Harris had to hire kid actors for her videos that were really awful. Are you hiring kid actors for the book party?
No, there will be no kid actors. And
Are you sure you know what's going on? She's going to blame staff for that. You know that, don't you?
I understand that. Yeah, no, I will not be hiring anybody to attend my book party to make it look like people like the book and like me. So if it's thin, it's thin, but my wife is usually pretty good at this stuff.
You know, I got to ask you about that story. I did my show prep yesterday, then I watched 12 Angry Men, and I missed the Washington Examiner story on the kid actors with the vice president. You know, that's the kind of thing like Jimmy Carter and the Rabbit, or that you just never get it off, do you?
Yeah, no, and I don't remember the Rabbit, but I've always thought of Jimmy Carter and the sweater. You know, it's kind of like, it's cold here, and I'm trying to fix it.
Oh, the Rabbit. Come on. If you Google Carter and the Rabbit, he tried to hit a rabbit who came after him in a canoe or a kayak.
Oh, God.
Oh, you forgot that? He tried to hit this rabbit in the water.
Remember, when Carter was elected, I was 5 years old.
That's true. And you wouldn't remember. I remember it.
I'm better on that tail end of the Carter presidency than I am in the beginning.
How about when Carter collapsed in a race? That was the last race we've ever had a president run, as far as I know, when he had to pull over.
Oh, man.
The optics were bad for Jimmy Carter.
I know. Look, I would say over the years I've seen, you know, presidents of both parties and vice presidents have bad moments, bad optical moments. You know, this tends to happen. You know, I think the thing with the vice president, with all, you know, to be a little serious with the analysis for a moment, it's sort of a reminder that as a standalone messenger and as a standalone politician, as much as she's reached a very incredible height and an unprecedented height, she's not that good at this. And that's one of the reasons why her presidential campaign itself didn't go very far, because she could never just sort of, she never publicly seemed to figure out when communicating to voters who she was, what she stood for, and what she wanted. In some ways, it's why it made her a very good vice presidential candidate for Joe Biden, because he wasn't going to get into any philosophical public fights with his running mate, which could have happened with a few others that he might have chosen. And, you know, it's one of those things that when I read it, I said, oh, yeah, go figure.
Well, let me ask you that. Glenn Youngkin was just on the show, and I asked him after I wrote in The Washington Post about the Youngkin-McAuliffe race. I got a call from a D.C. insider who said, you know, Terry McAuliffe is running for president, right? And I said, you're kidding. He said, no, Biden's not going to run. And Kamala Harris, he's going to be the acceptable mainstream Republican candidate at age 66, Democrat candidate at age 66. So I asked Glenn Youngkin, and he confirmed on the record, yeah, I've heard that, too. Have you heard that McAuliffe is planning on a 2024 run if he wins the governorship?
I hadn't heard it myself. It's not surprising, and it won't amount to much if he can't win his own campaign for governor next month.
Well, it explains why he has been so reluctant to reject the hard left defund the police people. I mean, there's been so many face plants in the Virginia governor's race by Terry McAuliffe. I couldn't figure it out. And then when this guy told me he's running for president, and then Glenn Youngkin just confirmed he's heard the same thing, all of a sudden it makes sense. You don't want to define CRT. You don't want to come out against defund the police if you want the Democratic nomination in 3 years.
Well, that's one way to look at it. I think sometimes, too, you know, politicians, I mean, look, first, I just want to back up. As a reporter, I want to say that the polling looks very good for Glenn Youngkin at the moment and the Republicans down ballot. And I reported on some of that yesterday evening. But 4 weeks is 4 weeks, and a lot can happen. If Glenn Youngkin wins this race, I think one of the things you look back on is whether or not Terry McAuliffe made the right call in terms of the office he was running for. Because a lot of the messaging, as one Republican told me yesterday, would be just fine for a U.S. Senate race even right now. But yep. It's not fine when you're running for governor.
Not when education's on the ballot. I'll tell you, McAuliffe's campaign makes Kamala Harris videos look well produced. That's how bad it's been. I am going to go read your reporting on it. I knew he had a poll lead, but I'm glad to hear that. I knew Glenn Youngkin had a polling lead, so I'm glad to hear that from David Drucker, whose new book, In Trump's Shadow, drops next week. Order it now. You'll get it on Monday, In Trump's Shadow by David Drucker. Thank you, David. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Here you at Inside the Beltway, joined by Byron York. He of the Washington Examiner and Fox News. He also sends out the morning newsletter. Byron, I have to begin with the vice president and the story that the Examiner ran last night, that the cringe-inducing video she released on the porch of the vice president's residence with the kids featured a half dozen child actors who were paid to play the part of enthusiastic children greeting the vice president in anticipation of getting to look at telescopes. The cringeworthy became one of those memorable tattoos on a person's career that never comes off. Agree or disagree?
Well, the child actor story explains some of the features of the video, that is, why the children weren't just really weirded out by the vice president's demeanor, because they were acting, and they were kind of briefed ahead of time on how to act, as opposed to real-world children who, if put in that situation, might be a little bit freaked. So I think that explains that. But this is a bigger story, the child actor story and the vice president in general, and the story you were talking with David about this idea, this rumor that Terry McAuliffe actually wants to run for president. These are all the same story, which is
yes.
The ability of Kamala Harris to run if the oldest president in history is not able to run for re-election in 2024, and what that means for the Democratic Party. I think the possibility of a 2024 Biden succession is a huge, huge story that the Democratic Party does not want to talk about.
It explains so much. It's sort of like for people of a certain age, meaning me, if someone says, I love it when a plan comes together, they think of this.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Do you know who that is, Byron?
No, I don't know who that is.
That's George Peppard in the A-Team playing Hannibal. The colonel is in charge of Mr. T and the other gang as crazy stuff happens and comes together. I love it when a commentary comes together. I had not figured out until after my Washington Post column on Yunk and McAuliffe came out how McAuliffe could be so bad. Why doesn't he repudiate defund the police? Why is he in favor of school boards? Why won't he define CRT? It made no sense. And then a friend called me up yesterday, a political consultant, said, well, Terry's running for president. He can't repudiate all these people. And I just asked Glenn Youngkin in the first hour, and he's heard it too. It makes perfect sense that he's running a campaign with an eye on 2024, and he cannot tick off the left.
It does make sense. It is a theory. And the other part about that is you have David Drucker's story about internal Republican polling, private Republican polling, suggesting Youngkin is going to win. But there's also the Real Clear Politics average of polls, which I'm looking at right now, which has McAuliffe up by 3.5 points. And out of, it looks like, 18 polls on the screen going back to July, you have McAuliffe leading in 17 and Youngkin leading in 1 in early September. So, I mean, it may work for him, which is another reason to do it.
Except the direction, Byron. I follow it pretty closely, and it started out double-digit McAuliffe lead over Youngkin. I think if you go back to the earliest polls in the RCP average, you'll see a double-digit lead for McAuliffe. And now it comes down to margin of error, and the internals are very good for Glenn. I don't expect people to believe me on that, but that's what they are. And they're very good, I think, because of schools. I just put up on Twitter a comment. You know, my Washington Post column is never exactly full of champagne popping corks. But someone went in there and said, look, I'm not voting for McAuliffe and Randy Weingarten, not in Northern Virginia. They've ruined our schools. I really think it's a schools education election in Virginia. And the folks outside of the Beltway are going to turn out in large numbers. I don't know if the Democratic vote in Northern Virginia is going to show up. Do you? I mean, there are signs all over Arlington County about reopen the schools last year that were not very pro Joe Biden, pro Terry McAuliffe signs.
Well, we talked about it. I think it was last week where I still believe that moment in the debate, which Youngkin has exploited quite a bit, where McAuliffe says, look, I just don't think parents should tell schools and what to teach. I just think that was a jaw dropping moment that people won't forget. So, listen, I think there's an excellent chance, but I don't think it's absolutely clear right now that Youngkin's going to win. And if he doesn't, it means all of this stuff you're talking about, which you can't understand why McAuliffe is doing what he's doing, is actually part of a winning campaign.
It's part of a winning campaign for the presidency and a useful campaign for the governorship to the presidency.
Well, if he can sneak by this election, then he's the sitting governor of Virginia, and he runs for president.
Yep, that's exactly what he's going to do. Now, Byron, you've been a newspaperman for a long time, and you know that headlines are not accidental. I am holding in my hand a list, no, not a list of names, but I'm holding in my hand a Politico story from this morning, the headline of which is, the president's decline is alarming, in quotes. Biden trapped in coronavirus malaise. What do you think that headline is intended to do?
Well, are you suggesting there's two meanings to decline?
I'm just suggesting I read that story and I said, what? And they know what they're doing.
Exactly. If I see a headline like that, the president's decline is alarming. I think, well, are you talking about his cognitive or his energy decline, or are you talking about his decline in the polls, which is, you know, got to be pretty alarming for him. It does say that he's in this coronavirus malaise. And the point of the story, one thing is absolutely true, is back in the early months of his presidency, when Biden was above the water in his job approval polling over, he's about 53-54%. The tent pole holding up his job approval rating was the public's approval of his handling of the virus, of the pandemic. And that has gone down, and it's gone way down. And it goes down along with other polling on his handling of the economy, which is underwater, of his handling of foreign affairs, specifically Afghanistan, which is deep on its Marianas Trench underwater, and his handling of the border, which is also well underwater. So the coronavirus is sort of the last thing to sink beneath the waves, but it was what was holding up his job approval rating.
Now, Byron, the fear of dealing with the president's physical well-being. I wrote a column on his infirmity. Ross Douthat wrote a column on his infirmity. The rest of the media is silent. And it's because we don't know what his physical condition is. We can only judge by pictures. I'm not a doctor. You're not a doctor. He just looks feeble to me, infirm. Doesn't mean he's got dementia or is losing his mental capacity. He just looks like an old man, and he walks like an old man, and he talks like an old man. He doesn't take questions. At what point is someone going to poll whether or not Americans are afraid that he's infirm?
It's not going to happen anytime soon, I don't think. I think Republicans have made some mistakes, certainly during the campaign, in talking about how Biden had dementia. I think you and I have discussed that. He clearly just doesn't. And they had somehow, remember in the lead up to the first Trump-Biden debate, there were Republicans who said, man, Biden won't even know where he is. And they ignore the fact that Biden had been in 11 debates in the Democratic primary. These were public debates. You could watch them. And he clearly didn't have dementia. Now, he wasn't very good. He wasn't very fast. And I think it's very clear that if you look at pictures or video of Biden from 15 years ago, it's very clear he slowed down a lot.
Yeah, but fatigue isn't fog. Fatigue is not fog. Fatigue is fatigue. But I do think that's a legitimate question. Infirmity is fatigue to ask, but I don't see it being asked by the pollsters. Ought they to?
I think that a lot of the public, and probably not just Republicans, wonder whether Biden is up to the presidency. I mean, I think they would kind of think about it that way. They're not going to think in terms of senility.
No, they're not.
Or dementia, but they're going to say, you know, is he really up to it? He just doesn't seem to be up to it. And I will say, a lot of this is going to be in comparison to Trump. When you look at that Iowa rally, the energy level with Trump, who spoke for an hour and 40 minutes, is pretty amazing.
It is. It is. People can't miss it. Byron York, always a pleasure. Thank you, Byron. Don't go anywhere, America. All right, Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about Americans standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting. waiting for me.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. That music means I'm joined by my friend, Admiral James Stavridis, retired United States Navy, former Allied Supreme Commander of NATO, former head of Southern Command, now chair of the Rockefeller Foundation. Admiral, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, Hugh. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Yesterday, I had your longtime colleague in arms, General Stanley McChrystal, on with me. I mentioned at that time 2034 as being a prophetic book for the times in which we are living. I want to play for you, if I can, Admiral, to get us started, a clip of the conversation with General McChrystal yesterday where he talked about China and Taiwan and war games. Cut number 13, please. And I read with great interest because I've got a friend in the war gaming business who cannot get members of Congress to do a war game about Taiwan. And the reason they cannot do so is that the members of Congress don't have the clearances necessary to participate in a war game involving the aggression against Taiwan. How crazy is that system, General McChrystal?
Well, I think you would need to fix that, because I don't think that's the only reason they don't do it. I think there's a desire on some people to be a step away, because if you're ignorant, you can say, I wasn't involved, and then you can criticize from the sidelines. If you get up close to something, you get a certain amount of responsibility because of that. But that's what we elect people for, to have that responsibility. And so I think it ought to be required, because in the middle of particularly a Taiwan crisis, it's going to be very, very dangerous. What we don't need is people who don't understand what's happening or don't understand what the different options are saying anything.
Yeah, your colleague and friend, Admiral Stavridis, is a regular guest on the show. And his new book, 2034, is about how a Taiwan war can start very, very quickly. And I just can't believe we're not running the right risk. Now, Admiral, I want you to take that in mind and combine with it. This morning on Twitter, Brett Baer retweeted Disclosed TV. Just in, Taiwan is part of China, says Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov. Put all that together and give me your reaction to everything you just heard.
Let's start with the Russia comment. No surprise, as you and I have discussed, one of the primary features of our time geopolitically is not just the rise of China, but the growing diplomatic speak word here alert, the growing condominium between China and Russia. Condominium in diplomacy is just a close alignment of interests, military activities, just short of a formal alliance. So no surprise there. Both those nations, China and Russia, see themselves drawing closer together. And Russia is simply highlighting this bright, shining red line that China has about Taiwan. Secondly, to General McChrystal, who's one of my very close friends, worked for me as the four-star commanding our forces in Afghanistan. Worked with him day by day through really hard times. Nobody better. Stan's assessment is spot on about not just the members of Congress, but everybody in the interagency who has not done a deep dive into not just China, but particularly the Taiwan scenario needs to. And that requires reading, study, thinking, looking at the right books, listening to the right experts, and above all, participating in the kind of exercises that you describe. So I think if you put those two things together, the one bell ringer in the back of your mind ought to be, you know, if we get into a serious conflict with China, we need to recognize that Russia will be closely involved. And that's something that features in the book 2034 as well.
You know, Admiral, it had not occurred to me until I read Risk. I had already read 2034, General McChrystal's new book is Risk, that we really ought to have, if not the president, then the vice president and the national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, along with Tony Blinken, running a Taiwan exercise along with Lloyd Austin, but members of Congress on armed services, because that is the likeliest geopolitical crisis of the first order that we face. Obviously, COVID came out of nowhere. It's a black swan. But we know that this is out there. We can run a couple of exercises on this. To your knowledge, has one been done involving senior players?
Two decades ago, I saw some exercises conducted by the Navy up in Newport, Rhode Island, that brought in some of those scenarios. And guess who played the president of the United States?
Newt
Gingrich.
Oh, Newt. Okay.
And, you know, Newt is deep, deep in history. He's very articulate. He played a terrific role. And so I think the idea of bringing particularly up and coming and higher level members of Congress and getting them in these war games makes a lot of sense. And the place to do it, Hugh, is actually not the Pentagon. It is, in fact, Newport, Rhode Island, the Naval War College, Carlisle, Pennsylvania, the Army War College, on and on. Those war colleges spend a lot of time in wargaming, exercising. They have all the expertise on site. They're actually pretty pleasant places to go for a long weekend and do something like this. I think a program along those lines would be terrific. And I would send a message to my good friend, the new Secretary of the Navy, Carlos Del Toro, and say, hey, take the lead on this and do it, because let's face it, it's primarily going to be a maritime scenario.
And Admiral, I think the most important hurdle to get over is to get people to believe this could happen. Now, you've written a novel with 2034. We've joked before, the only thing you got wrong is the date. This actually does keep me awake. I do think about, because we're a Navy family, what in the world would happen if Xi, sensing weakness in the White House, says now is the correlation of forces, using the old communist term, it will never be better to attempt the takeover of Taiwan. Do you think we've actually seriously thought that through on the executive branch side?
I think there is indeed very serious work on this, particularly at Indo-Pacific Command in Honolulu, Hawaii. Admiral callsign Lung Aquilino looks at this every day. He wakes up every morning thinking about this scenario. His counterparts in the Army and the Air Force, I should say his subordinates, the four-star service commanders in the Pacific, people like General Flynn, the head of U.S. Indo-Pacific Army Command, they think about this every single day. But to the point you and Stan were discussing, I don't think that level of consciousness has penetrated back to the executive branch in Washington, and certainly not to the Hill, other than maybe a few small windows where people are thinking about it. Let's not underestimate the human tendency, Hugh, to believe that tomorrow is going to look just like today, maybe just a little bit different. Maybe there'll be a story about a football coach, but things won't really change that much. Except the history of the world tells us again and again and again, tomorrow doesn't look like today. Go back 100 years ago to the start of World War I. An assassin's bullet takes out a member of the royal family, the Austro-Hungarian Empire. 4 years later, the Austro-Hungarian Empire is gone. The Russian Empire is gone. The Ottoman Empire is gone. Who could have predicted any of that? But it explodes in front of us. Tomorrow may not look like today. This is one we ought to be thinking about.
The one clue that I get from that is that you use the term Indo-PACOM. Now, most Americans after 20 years of war are acquainted with CENTCOM. I really do think if you're a sentient American and you're reading the news or listening to it, you know what CENTCOM is. Indo-PACOM, not so much. And that is probably, is it the geographically largest command, Admiral?
Oh, absolutely. I think half the earth, literally, is there. The second largest is the one I commanded, U.S. European Command. And we were large because of Russia being included. But Indo-Pacific includes the Pacific Ocean. And here's a news flash for non-mariners in the crowd. You can take all the land on the earth, and it will fit inside the Pacific Ocean. I once sailed across the Pacific. Not only did we not visually see another ship for 2 weeks, we didn't come across one on our radar for a week. And our radar looked out 200 miles. So it's a big body of water. Yes, Indo-Pacific Command is by far the largest of the combatant commands geographically.
We have to start focusing on this. Before we run out of time, though, I want to do what I did with General McChrystal. General Odierno passed away over the weekend. I'm sure, like General McChrystal, he is a colleague of yours over many years in different commands. Any comments on General Odierno?
As I'm sure Stan told you, Ray Odierno, Stan McChrystal, Jim Stavridis all graduated together in 1976. I hope Stan, by the way, pointed out that the Navy football team beat the Army football team on which Ray Odierno played in 1976. But and Ray is smiling down hearing me say that. But he was a towering man, you know, 6'5", football jeans, blunt, direct, a Jersey kid. Nobody better. Nobody, you know, your finest friend, your worst enemy if you had to fight him in the field. I loved Ray Odierno.
On that note, Admiral James Stavridis, thank you so much for joining me. See you again next week. Drew Hewitt here. If you listen to my show for a while, you know I love meat. You know that. I love going to restaurants. I love a great steak. Well, I don't have to go anymore because of Moink Box. MOINKBox.com. You know what's in the Moink Box? That's right. Great steak, great bacon. Here's why I love it. It's grown by an 8th-generation farmer who makes sure all of his experience goes into every single box. The very best steak, the very best bacon, the very best chicken and best salmon you'll ever eat, not from a grocery store. You'll only find it from the family farm and caught by independent Alaska fishermen. That's why you need to try MoinkBox.com. Join the Moink movement today. Go to MoinkBox.com/Hewitt right now, and listeners to this show get free bacon for a year. That's 1 year of the best bacon you'll ever taste, but for a limited time for that offer. MoinkBox.com/Hewitt. That's MoinkBox.com/Hewitt. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. I got so exercised over Greg Popovich popping off like an idiot on Columbus and Hitler and not mentioning the Uyghurs that I forgot to tell you about Andrew and Todd.com. Andrew Del Rey, Todd Avakian, friends of mine. They'll forgive me, but do, if you're buying a house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or you're refinancing a house, call 888-888-1172 with Sierra Pacific Mortgage. They are sponsors of the show. And I missed their bit because I was so upset about Greg Popovich and his idiotic comments yesterday. So AndrewandTodd.com. Josh Krushauer, are you an NBA fan?
Somewhat. I mean, I kind of lost interest in the NBA when the Wizards don't make the playoffs at all, but yeah, I follow the NBA. I like basketball.
So, you know, Popovich is allegedly this brilliant guy, and he's a very good basketball coach. But yesterday, Gruden gets fired for misogynistic, homophobic emails, and Popovich compares Columbus to Hitler and doesn't get asked a question about the genocide in China and the Uyghurs and his complicity in that. What's wrong with the NBA sports media?
Well, it's not just the sports media. It's the leadership of the NBA, which, you know, I think they've suffered the most of all the four sports leagues because they got the most political. All the leagues, to some extent, have gotten more political than they once were. But the NBA really just, like, I remember they during the bubble season, they, you know, put Black Lives Matter on the court. They let players offer their political takes on things left and right. And that's not a great place to be. You want one of the top rules of building a good team, an effective team, is that you're not divided by politics. You're one team, and you don't talk about these issues that have nothing to do with the NBA. You know, Popovich has a long history of offering his hot political takes. This comes as no surprise to me that he said something like that.
I don't mind his giving his hot political takes, but if he's going to give a take on Hitler, genocide, slavery, and Columbus, somebody ought to ask him about the Uyghurs and the ongoing genocide in China from which he profits.
Yeah, and someone should ask David. Someone should ask the Silver, and someone should ask a lot of the players who play in China, you know, what they think about that. I mean, that's a much more relevant and timely issue for the NBA, at least. But no, you're right that there's sort of a double standard, and you don't get the type of scrutiny. If you're going to open everything up to politics, you might as well. You should be talking about issues that directly affect the NBA and its bottom line. And
if you're going to hijack. If you're going to hijack a basketball press conference to rant about Hitler and Columbus, you're going to get asked a China question if you have a real media. I got to ask you about Vice President Harris. This also happened overnight. Child actors. Does that? I mentioned earlier today Jimmy Carter and the Rabbit, and someone, David Duck, didn't know about Jimmy Carter and the Rabbit. Do you know about Jimmy Carter and the Rabbit?
I do. And it was a symbol of a total malaise and a total.
Okay.
I did.
Is this in that category? Childhood actors for a terribly Veep-like moment. Is this in that category?
Well, it's a Veep-like moment. I mean, Vice President Harris has made her own misfortune every step of the way, whether it was, you know, indulging an anti-Semitic comment a couple of weeks ago at George Mason University, and then not having the principal to speak out against it herself, relying on other people to do it for her, whether it's the border and, you know, whether it's the constant slip-ups in interviews that you know. You remember in the first couple months of the administration, Hugh, we heard a lot about the Biden-Harris administration, that it was a two-person deal. You don't hear much about that anymore from Democrats because they are worried about Vice President Harris's political intuition or political savvy. It reminds me, the one parallel historically I would draw is Vice President Quayle in 88 and how he just bumbled his way and made a lot of mistakes. In that case, the media really lobbed on to everything he did.
Oh, what a surprise. You mean the media is not jumping on the child actors. Let me close by asking you about Glenn Youngkin was on earlier today, and someone had clued me in. McAuliffe is running for president. I didn't know that. That's why he won't take on the defund the police crowd. He won't take on CRT, is that this is a springboard to a presidential run because Biden's not going to run again. Glenn Youngkin told me this morning he's heard the same thing. Have you figured that out? I mean, I guess I'm the last to know that Terry McAuliffe thinks he's presidential material.
No, I actually think the answer is quite simple, which is that it's not just Terry McAuliffe that doesn't think education, the curriculums, the you know, what's been deemed critical race theory, that it's not an issue. It's the overall party. It's President Biden. It's Vice President Harris. It's a party leadership that's much more to the left than the average voter. And that this Virginia governor's race, I wrote about this in a column, Hugh, this is going to be a test of whether there's a bubble to be burst in the Democratic Party, outlook. I mean, I talked to Democratic strategists left and right, and none of them think that, you know, the curriculum, the school openings, that this is really a big issue. They've denied it over a year now. I've written about this as being a top political challenge. So this is the red flag. If Youngkin wins and he runs on it, and he's been running only on education. If you watch your TV in Washington, if you watch Richmond TV, you'll see only education ads for Glenn Youngkin. So that he parlays that into a victory. And the Democrats don't have any response for that. If they're not moving to the middle to really respond to the concerns of parents, that's going to be a big problem. I mean, that's the problem with the Democratic Party, in, politically speaking, that their ideology is blinding them to what voters are saying on the ground, even in a bluish state like Virginia. Yeah.
CRT makes people angry, and voters turn against those who purport to advance it or are silent about it. And masks on small children in schools makes parents very crazy. And the Democratic Party is complicit, and they are going to pay in the Commonwealth. Glenn Youngkin's going to win, and I think you're right. Your analysis is right. Follow Josh on Twitter at Hotline Josh. Read everything he writes in the National Journal. Come back tomorrow, America, for the next Hugh Hewitt Show.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.